He hates the Chiefs.
The first time ever Mahomes goes 9-8.
He's delusional about his Bengals.
Joe Burrow's going to get the job done again because he's going to be healthy. And they're going to win and they're going to go to New Orleans and be in the Super Bowl.
But he knows everything about college football. Here's the host of the 249 Miles of College Football podcast, Drew Nixon.
Well, while the rest of us here in Chiefs Kingdom are probably celebrating after the events of yesterday afternoon and evening, Drew, I imagine you're struggling a little bit. You know, what is your reaction to the Chiefs taking down the Houston Texans yesterday, 23-14?
I think it was a really good win. I did pick the Chiefs. I've picked the Chiefs in all but, I think, two games this year. So people have to give me a hard time, but I do have a respect for the Chiefs. It is a little frustrating, though, because I think that matchup yesterday, it should have been the Bengals, and they're playing the Chiefs instead in the divisional round, but it didn't happen. It's all good.
Yeah, just curious, you know, I mean, we've been talking a lot this morning. It's been all over social media, right? You've got 31 fan bases complaining about, you know, two controversial calls, the roughing the passer and the unnecessary roughness on Mahomes, and oh, the refs were in the Chiefs' pocket and this and that and the other. Not a lot of mention from the other fan bases about the 8 sacks, the botched fourth down, the two missed kicks, and the blocked field goal. What do you make of that? And what do you make of, like, D'Amico Ryans and Will Anderson's post-game comments saying that, you know, they had to play against the refs as well as they did the Chiefs?
Yeah, that's a little bit of loser mentality. Like, even when the Bengals have had problems and they've complained, it's very frustrating to hear, you know, the referee talk, because to your point, Logan, it's very hard to overcome 8 sacks and win a playoff game. Although CJ Stroud battled and played really well, played about as good as he can. It seemed like for about 3 quarters, Houston played the better game, but Kansas City was still leading, like, at halftime. So I thought the Chiefs should have felt great at halftime, given the position that they were in, because it felt like they hadn't quite hit their stride yet. But defensively, the most impressive thing, I think, for the Chiefs was George Karlaftis having the day that he did. What a big moment for him. And, yeah, everybody loves to complain about the Chiefs, and I don't like doing the whole ref thing, because some of it might be valid, I guess, in terms of the flopping and stuff like that. But, hey, Josh Allen's been doing that for a couple years now, and all of a sudden it's a problem now. Kind of interesting, I guess.
Yeah. And then the flop that everybody, you know, that a lot of the Twitterverse or whatever, which, you know, Twitter can be great, it can also be an absolute cesspool, was complaining about there on the end of the side. He didn't even get the call there, right? It's not like he generated a 15 yarder for that, for the flopping that, so, you know, that definitely occurred. I'm not going to say it allegedly. He flopped for sure. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, curious, now that the Chiefs are in the AFC Championship game for the 7th straight year, you look at that other divisional round game, Bills versus Ravens, before we get into some college football talk here with you. What do you make of that matchup tonight? Who do you think the Chiefs meet next week at Arrowhead for a trip to the Super Bowl?
So I'm leaning towards the Ravens, and the reason why, I think, is just when you look at what Baltimore has done defensively, and I know that they haven't played as good of opponents, which is probably part of why they've been so good in this area. But it was mentioned, I think, last week when the Ravens played the Pittsburgh Steelers, is that they moved Kyle Hamilton up to high safety. And since that move, they jumped from, like, the mid to high 20s in passing rankings and passing efficiency to first in the NFL in that time frame. So I think that adjustment's really been able to help them out. And they, to me, are maybe the more dangerous team just in terms of what they've been able to do against the pass compared to what Buffalo would do. If I was a Chiefs fan, I'd maybe actually would want Buffalo maybe to win this game, I think, because I think the Chiefs can take advantage, and given that they played them more recently, make some adjustments there. But I think Baltimore's going to end up winning the game. I think Derrick Henry might end up being a little bit too much for Buffalo today.
Going to be a fun one to watch, no doubt about it. And we anxiously await to see who the Chiefs are going to be heading up against next week at Arrowhead for that trip to New Orleans. But we do have a massive game tomorrow. A champion will be crowned, the College Football Playoff National Championship, the first year of this 12-team format, and it's two teams who did not win their conferences, one that's not even in a conference, two teams that did not receive first-round byes, the 7th seed in Ohio State against the 8th seed in Notre Dame. Who's going to win this national championship game? Everybody wants to know, but I'm just curious to get your thoughts on how this format has worked in your view? This 12-team field, right? You got the top four seeds, conference, you know, power conference champions. Boise State gets a bye. You've got you got Arizona State with a bye. And then you've got, of course, Oregon and Georgia. Do you like the way that this field has played out with 12 teams? Do you think it's too many? Do you think that they should expand it even further? Just curious to hear what you think.
So from the jump, I always thought that eight was the play at first. Like, go to eight, and then you can expand even further if you want to. Obviously, we're not going to go back from 12 to eight because that's just not how things work with these kinds of things and money. I think that 12 has been fine. I get why people have been complaining about the about the blowouts and stuff like that, but college football, that's part of its DNA in a way, where when you get teams that are matched up against each other that are at their peak unequal, or even if they are a little bit equal at their peak, if one or two matchup things go one team's way, the game can get out of hand, i.e. Tennessee and Ohio State, two really good defenses, but one offense played significantly better than the other and one defense struggled, and the game was a blowout. I think that it's been good for college football in general, just because the national audience has grown. People are paying more attention to college football, it seems like, than they ever have from a casual fan angle, which is good, even though I'm a diehard, and there are others who are complete diehards who feel about it, and it's fine. The national scope on the entire playoff is there because there's more teams involved. People like that. The idea that everybody gets a shot, including the little guy like Boise State, I think it's been a success. I do think they're going to expand at some point. They're already talking about it, as a matter of fact. There's some things that need to be tweaked, like seeding, and I also would love, and they're actually going to be talking about this, I think, for 2026 or maybe beyond, the quarterfinal games hosting on campus. That would be really exciting to me, because I think if you do get a bye, you deserve to host a playoff game.
I agree. I love the way that that would shape up if it were the way that it ultimately plays out. But you look at these two teams, Notre Dame against Ohio State, and I find it fascinating, right? When you looked at the semifinal matchups, we live in an era where, I believe that college football and professional football are different in some respects. Everybody is kind of the opinion nowadays where it's offense, offense, offense all the time. You got to score points. Offense wins you games. Offense does this. This is a matchup between two of the five best defenses in college football, right? All four of these teams, whether it's Texas and Penn State as well in the semifinal rounds, all four of which were top 10 defenses in the league. So sort of adding on to that adage of offense wins games, defense wins championships, what do you make of these two defenses going into this game Monday night? What are going to be the keys to success for the Irish and the Buckeyes on that side of the football to try to give themselves an opportunity to win?
Yeah, I think I'll start off with Ohio State, then I'll go to Notre Dame. So defensively for Ohio State, you know, you got JT Tuimoloau, you got Caleb Downs, you've got some really good defensive players. Jack Sawyer, of course, who's had a ridiculously good college football playoff and season. Containing Riley Leonard, I think, is going to be important for them. One of the things that Notre Dame did particularly well against Penn State, if you look at moving the ball around, they used the running backs in the passing game. One of the things that Ohio State had a little bit of a difficult time with, in particular with Jaden Blue and also Quintrevion Weisner, is they allowed them in the passing game to do some damage. So if you look at Notre Dame and what they do effectively, Aeneas Williams is utilized and also Jeremiah Love in the passing game. Containing them, because the wide receivers aren't as talented, obviously, for Notre Dame as Ohio State, but they move the ball around a little bit more. And Riley Leonard, just keeping contain on him because he's able to use his legs, he's able to make big plays. If you can put pressure on him and allow him to stay to keep him inside the pocket, we've seen him make turnovers and commit turnovers and make mistakes. So that might be some of the game plan going forward. They've got a really good pass rush, so I would expect them to put some pressure on Riley Leonard. On the flip side, Texas went all in on stopping Jeremiah Smith. They did a really good job of it. They still lost the game because Carnell Tate had a great day. Emeka Egbuka had a really good day. And Travion Henderson kind of went off. If Notre Dame can eliminate the run game or really limit it with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, then you're making Will Howard make all the plays. And we've seen him make a couple mistakes as well throughout the college football playoff. I do wonder that if they can stop the run game, do they go all in on stopping Jeremiah Smith, or do they trust their guys man-to-man? Al Golden said that they're going to go man-to-man. He thinks that Christian Gray, who's one of the best corners in all of college football, and then Jordan Clark and then Nickel. They've also got Xavier Watts at free safety. They've got a secondary that's good enough to hang on or to hang in with those guys who are elite for Ohio State. So I just feel like the game's going to be really good because I think your point is right. Everybody loves offense, but this could be another one of those defensive games where maybe things break out a little bit in the second half, but it could be lower scoring going into halftime because these defenses are so good at what they do.
And you mentioned some of the offense there, right? Riley Leonard for Notre Dame, that two-headed running back attack they've got with Anais Williams and you know, the other back for Notre Dame. I blank on his name at the moment. And then Ohio State, you know, that offense is loaded for bear. The two running backs with Judkins and Quinshon, you know, and Henderson, Travion Henderson, and then the receivers with Emeka Abuka and Jeremiah Smith. It seems like on paper, right, the Buckeyes have the advantage because they got a more, you know, a more name notable sort of offense. What does Notre Dame need to do offensively to be successful? Is it, you know, using Riley Leonard with his legs? Is it relying on the running backs? Is it trying to get the tight ends a little bit more involved? What do the Irish have to do to keep pace?
I think some of it goes into all of what you said, but also I think they need to just stay ahead of the sticks. If they're in a situation where Riley Leonard, he's likely not going to use his legs to get a first down, but he has to make a big-time throw. He's capable, but I think you're going to live with it a little bit more if you're Ohio State and it's a 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, instead of it being like a 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4 situation. If Notre Dame can stay ahead of the sticks and try to get it to those 3rd and short, 3rd and mid situations, it bodes well for them. And for Ohio State, being able to be in that spot defensively can really help them. For Ohio State, I think it's, in terms of like a key for them offensively, if they can get the run game going, it'll open everything up for them because we know how good Jeremiah Smith is, where it doesn't matter if he's covered or even double teamed at this rate. If they throw the ball up to him, he's able to make a play. But teams have been doing good enough on him where other guys are getting open and they don't even have to throw the ball to Jeremiah Smith. The fact that Notre Dame is likely going to go man-to-man, it sounds like, I feel like there's going to be some opportunities for Jeremiah Smith, and Will Howard's got to connect on those because obviously when you have a talent like Jeremiah Smith, you got to get him the ball, and it's only going to help Notre Dame or only going to help Ohio State's chances of putting some points on the board.
So if it is Ohio State that ultimately wins this national championship, which I am of the belief they will, what does this mean for a head coach in Ryan Day who, you know, comes into Columbus and has to fill the shoes of Urban Meyer, a guy who won a college football playoff national championship for the Buckeyes and has been under so much scrutiny and such a massive magnifying glass? And, you know, people were talking about after the Michigan game, is Ryan Day going to get fired? And all they've done is make it all the way to the college football playoff national championship game. What is that going to do for him and for this Buckeyes team moving forward to finally have that mark against them scratched clean?
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit on the 249 Miles of College Football podcast. Anywhere you can download podcasts, you can go find it. There's so many storylines in this game, Logan, and one of them is what you're talking about. Ryan Day has an opportunity, which it's really weird, almost to etch his legacy, etch his name in stone at Ohio State for being I don't want to say a legend because I don't know if that's necessarily the right word, but he's going to be in some celebratory lore because of winning a national title, which is kind of nuts considering where we were 2 or 3 weeks ago, where everybody was essentially ready to put his head on the chopping block. It is interesting. I know that the Ohio State fan base is obviously passionate and everything like that, but they were criticized by Kirk Herbstreit and everything. Like, the man is 45-8 or whatever the heck it was. Whatever his record is, it's ridiculous. It's a lot like what Jim Harbaugh had at Michigan before he finally beat Ohio State was his record's really good. He just can't win the big game. For Ryan Day to win a national title while also never beating Michigan would be kind of crazy, and I think that people would accept it only if he won a national title. Like, him making it here doesn't mean anything to them, and as far as I'm concerned, with the fan base in terms of celebrating him as an Ohio State head coach. But if he gets it done, I think his stature within the Ohio State fan base and alma mater group is going to be a lot more likable if they are able to pull it off.
And then on the flip side for Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame, you know, he gets the job after Brian Kelly leaves and goes to LSU. And when asked why he made the move, he said he wanted to go to a program where he had the resources to win a national championship. Hasn't gotten anywhere near it in his couple of years at LSU, and Marcus Freeman has Notre Dame 60 minutes away from their first national championship since 1991. What would a win for the Fighting Irish mean for Marcus Freeman and for Brian Kelly when he made those sort of, you know, inflammatory comments back when he took the job in Baton Rouge?
It would mean so much because obviously, you know, it is nice that we have two big brands in the national title, but Notre Dame being one of those brands and them having struggled whenever they've made a national title or been in the national conversation here as of late, it would be a massive deal. Where I think, honestly, if Marcus Freeman, if they win the title Tuesday, they should start building a statue for Marcus Freeman because it would mean that big of a deal. Not only that, but one of the other storylines is he's now become the first black coach to be in the national title game. He can be the first black coach to ever win a national title. So there's a lot that people are looking forward to the potential of regarding history, not just with Notre Dame, but with Marcus Freeman in particular. For Brian Kelly, I think it's obvious that because they have the same amount of resources. I know that NIL has helped things out, but Notre Dame's NIL situation is more unique compared to other schools across the country. Marcus Freeman being able to utilize that and get them to a national title amidst this, I think just kind of shows that he's a better coach than Brian Kelly. And then the fact, like you said, Brian Kelly hasn't sniffed a national title at LSU yet. The resources are still the same as far as I'm concerned, but Marcus Freeman's getting him there. Marcus Freeman might be one of, if not the best coach in college football right now at the moment. His players love him, and it would mean a whole lot for Notre Dame, I think, because he's made him likable, which is really weird because we're used to not liking Notre Dame at all whatsoever. And I know you and I talked about this a little bit last week, Logan, but the fact that he's made them likable as well, very, very unique situation at Notre Dame with a Marcus Freeman, and he's showing why over the course of these last couple of weeks why everybody does like him so much, I think.
It's certainly a weird change of heart, you know, not being absolutely against Notre Dame all the time. But final question I've got for you, Drew, is a pretty simple one. Who wins this game? You know, what is your prediction for the Buckeyes and the Fighting Irish? Who is going to hoist this college football playoff national championship trophy in the first year of the 12-team format?
So I think Ohio State is going to do just enough to win the game. I've got the Buckeyes 24-21. I'm going to stick with whoever won the game between Oregon and Ohio State wins the whole thing. I think that this is what happens. It's going to be a good one, though. I think people can expect a really good national title game, which would be a nice culmination of how good this playoff has been.
I love it. I'm with you, Drew. I've got Ohio State winning this game. I got it up being a little bit more high scoring. I've got Buckeyes 31-24 in this game, but I agree. I think this is going to be a phenomenal matchup. I don't think it'll be one of those one-sided affairs that we grew so accustomed to with the four-team format. Really, really excited about this one. That's Drew Nixon. He is the midday producer for Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. He's also the host of the 249 Miles of College Football podcast here through Odyssey. Drew, appreciate you taking some time this morning. Have a good weekend, man.
Thanks for having me, Logan. You too.
No problem at all. That's Drew Nixon joining us, talking some college football playoff national championship game, Notre Dame Fighting Irish against the Ohio State Buckeyes tomorrow night